Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. Amen. No rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game. Better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. Amen. No rain.
Hey now, it's the Mike and JD Show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined as always by JD, by God, Oliva. How you doing, JD?
Dude, I had no idea Uno can go on forever.
Yeah, like, it's quite the game.
Like, I was playing before with the family. It was going for like 40 minutes, one-handed Uno. I've never played before. And I look, and my wife, like, oh, I got the show, so she's like, oh, I won't take that long. Next thing you know, I look down at my watch, and it's freaking 8:55. I'm like, I gotta go! So, sorry, my bad, guys.
Yeah. I thought we were going to have an issue tonight because of the daylight savings. Like, we essentially lost an hour. So I thought my kids are going to go down way late. So I was like, oh, man, this is going to be tough. But we actually got them down before 9 p.m. Eastern time, which is actually that's pretty good. So that's kind of that's standard even without the daylight savings. So
I wish it was
good to go.
I wish we could get the boy down before 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Like at 10, he's like, no, like it's useless fight.
Well, we're just now getting to the point where my daughter is putting herself down, but the last 2 days have been like a little bit difficult. So she has not wanted to do that, but she did like the whole week last week. She did it just fine. And then like last night it was an issue. And then tonight she still did it herself tonight, but she did not want to at first. She was like, no, I need somebody with me. We're like, oh, okay. So we're like taking turns on that, but it ended up working out. So we're good to go.
That ain't going to get better, the listening thing.
Yeah, no. And I don't know where my daughter gets it from, but she's a real smart ass. I have no idea.
No clue. Same with mine. I was telling one of my bosses, my principal, her daughter's on the same kids wrestling team as Andy, and her dad's another coach. And I say, if he tells his daughter to do something, she says, okay. If I tell Andy to do something, he looks at me and goes, why?
Yeah.
So like, I guess, yeah, I get that.
Like my kids, like, you know, always, there's always like a debate or like an alternative solution. Uh-huh. Everything becomes a negotiation. Mm-hmm. So like I could give her favorite food of all time and she'll be like, no, I think I want something different. It's like, okay.
Yep. Yep. The moment my wife always says, the moment that she suggests doing something he likes, he's like, I don't really want to do that. So it's like, yeah, it's just for spite.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to the chat. Chat is blowing up tonight. Please get your chats in. If you want to stop me dead in my tracks, get your super chats in. Also, if you really want to support the show, head to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow and then give us a like, a comment, and a subscribe right here on this YouTube channel. Thank you so much. And then we're also live on my Twitter account. I got it offered 50% off for 2 months. So I was like, oh, okay, I'll do it. just so I could edit my posts and I could stream the show. So we're back streaming the show on Twitter for like 2 months, and then I'm gonna cancel it, of course. So I'm not paying top dollar for that, for sure. Definitely not doing that. But let's get to the chat. AWN says, I can't wait for Dakota Kai to compare AEW and WWE catering if she ends up going there. Yeah, that's probably where she'd end up. She's talented, but they're so stacked there. It's like it's hard to break through that level. She mentioned TNA, but she was being nice. They're too poor to afford her, even though they'd be a better fit. Well, I think that she would be in a better spot for sure. But yeah, I don't like TNA. I don't think they're giving out a ton of dough right now.
Is it better to make more money and be a lesser player, or to make less money and be a big player? I know on Twitter the idea is if you stay in the one spot, you can be a star making a lot less money. Like, I guess it depends on what your priorities are and what you are in your personal life.
And for Dakota Kai, it depends on how much money she saved, you know, being in WWE for whatever it was, 6-7 years. And then what her bills are like at this point. So I think for Dakota Kai and Carl Fredericks, that's her boyfriend. I don't know if they're married or not, but I think like them going to TNA as like a duo, I think they could probably do good things there. But that also comes with like limitations. The amount of money, the earning potential there is not as big as it would be for AEW. But if you're an AEW, you're probably not going to get used a bunch, but at least that checks in that mailbox every week for sure.
What happened to DJ Carl? Is he working anywhere right now?
He was talented, dude. I remember him in New Japan and I was like, this guy's going to be a star. And then for whatever reason, he got to NXT and they wanted to play off of like his ethnicity. You know, it's WWE, like, so they wanted to play off that he's Native American. Was like, okay, but they didn't do like the classic like reservation style, but they were like with the name, and then they made him a DJ all of a sudden.
Yeah, they made him like a native DJ, which is like the weirdest thing. I remember I made a joke once on Twitter about like, remember when DJ, I called him DJ Carl. Remember when DJ Carl was supposed to go deep in the G1 and then he left for WWE? How'd that work out? Retweeted it with like a middle finger or something like that. So very clear. Like, I didn't even tag the guy. I was like, I literally said DJ Carl. Yeah. And he must have been any kind of, I don't know. I don't know how he got a hold of that one, but it was one of those, oh shit, I thought I was being under the cover enough. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I thought he was going to be the man. He was like the jewel of that American class.
Yeah.
And nothing.
Nothing. Wild. Yeah. It's weird. It just didn't work for him. I did a video last week. Every once in a while, I do these free agency breakdowns. And I was like, kind of surprised that Carl hadn't really landed anywhere, and Dakota too. So I was like, kind of like, hey, what it would look like if TNA were to bring them in. Cause I was like, Carl he's Shibata trained, right? Yeah. And then he also has the WWE training where it's like, he knows where the hard cam's at. He can do a forward roll, and he can do O face, which TNA covets. Right. And I was like, I'm surprised that he just haven't brought the guy in. Like, he's a really good wrestler. And I think if you could just shake that NXT stink off of him and bring in New Japan Carl Fredericks, I think you got somebody.
Dude, I feel like he must have pissed Rocky off massively
when
he left to get no looks from AEW whatsoever. Like, everybody gets brought in for a Ring of Honor show. Apparently, they've had Ashanti the Adonis signed for like a year.
Yeah, yeah.
I had no idea. Nobody knew.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to get to that because we have a whole segment about AEW, like signing literally everyone. But
everyone but these two.
Crazy. Yeah. They even had the colognes in over the weekend.
Did they really? Wow.
At Ring of Honor. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think they're signed, but I think they're just like, they live in Florida. So.
Oh, hey, want to do a job? Come on in.
Yeah. Yeah. Come on in. That's crazy. Let's see. Damian Redmond said TNA needs to just throw a market value check at Ricky Sosa. Oh, we're getting into Ricky Sosa when I talk about my TNA adventure. Are you familiar with who Ricky Sosa is, JD?
Only on Twitter. I've never seen him actually work. You were talking about him. I'm curious what a market value check for Ricky Sosa would be. Like, what does that mean?
That would I think I have an idea. We're gonna get into that as I tell my TNA story, because he was he was probably the highlight of the show for me for sure. There's better matches, but I think just like seeing him, I think, was one of the highlights for the show. Let's see. Awesome. Shrey says, wait, was that Uno game only one game or multi? 45 minutes for one game.
Freaking game. It doesn't help the fact I don't know how to play. I've never played Uno before. My wife and kid are like, we've played before. And I'm like screwing up. They like, apparently if you don't say Uno, you have to take more cards. And I'm like, oh, what kind of bullshit is this? And then like, it just all the reversing and stuff. And I got pummeled. But somehow the game didn't end. I just had so many cards.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get a chat blow up. I'm gonna try to get some more of your chats. Just keep them coming. Ask good questions, and we'll get you. And of course, super chats always take priority. But hey, yeah, absolutely, man. We need all the help we can get over here. But so I was in Atlanta on Friday. I went to the TNA taping. So here's the backstory. I think I told it before, but just gonna give a quick Cliff's Notes as to what happened. So A couple weeks ago, I was tweeting about No Surrender at TNA, like one of their TNA Plus shows, and I was pretty brutal to it. I was in a pretty bad mood, I think. I was pretty tough on that show, to say the least. And next thing you know, I'm blocked. I was like, oh shit. So I screenshotted the block, and it was like, just because I do get a lot of shit from people on Twitter about being a TNA homer. Like, everybody's like, oh, Mike, you always give TNA the benefit of the doubt, JD specifically.
Yes.
I was like, just in case anybody thinks I'm like too nice to TNA, here's what they think of me. And they blocked me. Well, and I'll just say who it was. It was Carlos Silva. He reached out and he was like, hey, Mike, they didn't come for me. And I told them to unblock you. He's like, we don't need to do that. He goes, you do a good job pushing us forward. That was kind of like his way of explaining it. And he goes, so we don't need to do that. And he goes, and we'd love to have you at a show sometime. And so I was like, well, go ahead, JD.
No, I was going to say, they should. The fact that they're willing to block you, like, we're part of a major pro wrestling podcasting network, and you are the only guy that willingly covers TNA on this entire network. What the hell do you want? Oh, good night, Andy. Love you, man. No, I don't understand. Like, you're the only guy that will, like, willingly cover TNA to the point you get shit on from people from our shows. And I'm like,
Voices of Wrestling Network.
And from me specifically. Like, yeah. And then I just saw, like, they blocked you. I'm like, they're going to block the one guy who, like, I don't know, like, just because we specifically, you are not everything to you. And I hate that. Not everything is sunshine and rainbows at a company.
Yeah.
Does.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll get into a little bit, but he just reached out and he was like super nice about it, because his view is like, I'm pushing them. That's the way he like looks at it.
I
agree with him, right? I'm always pushing them to be better with my criticism. That's always the goal, and that's the goal. And entertaining people is the goal. And sometimes when I'm criticizing them, and I do it entertaining way, I'm a dick. I'm a giant like asshole, right? But people think that's funny. A lot of people think that's funny, right? But I'm gonna get into that, because I had a conversation about this with somebody there. So he invited me, and he said, "Well, hey," I told him, "like, well, if you're ever in Charlotte, I'd love to go." And he goes, "Well, we're gonna be in Atlanta." And I was like, you know what? I mapped it out. It was only 4 hours. So it's like I can do that. Let me see if I can get a kitchen pass. Wife said that's kind of one of your dreams. So go ahead. If they're going to like bring you in, like, that's cool. I wasn't like, I didn't think I was going to be VIP or anything like that, but I was like, I'm pretty sure I'm going to get a good seat at least. And I get to meet the boss. And I was like, that'd be fun for me. Right. And I was like, and maybe I can meet like a wrestler or two, which I only met one. And I'll tell you who that is in a minute, which I'm not divulging any like state secrets or anything like that. So anyway, I get there, get my ticket. I'm front row ringside, right behind Tom Hannifin and Matthew Raywalt, the announce desk. I'm like right up against the guardrail. And the first person I meet is head of media, Ross Foreman. And we have a good discussion. And he came over. I then met Carlos Silva himself and his one of his assistants named Nicole. She's really nice. And we had a good chat. I met It's Still Real to Me, Damn It, Dave. I met him. I got my picture taken with him. I had good discussions with a lot of people there, and it was fun. So anyway, I have a discussion with somebody that works there, and the topic of my criticism of the company came up, and you could tell that they had something that they wanted to say. Like, they just needed to get something off their chest. And I just kind of let them do it. I just feel like when someone's upset, you got to just kind of let them get it all out. Cause if you don't, it's just going to get worse. Right. And so, the feeling inside of TNA about me, and they said that they've had a lot of conversations about me specifically, which blew my mind. Cause I'm like,
that's insane to me.
I got a couple thousand followers. I'm not that popular. The podcast gets 500 views on YouTube. It's not that big of a deal. Right.
No.
But they've had a lot of conversations about me, and they said that they think that I don't like them at all, and that I don't like anything that they do, and I can't be pleased, right? Like, they said they named off other media people and were like, we know what this person likes. We know what this person likes. We understand that not everything's for everybody. There's stuff that we do that like certain people in the company don't like, but we just feel we have to do certain things. But you specifically seem to be always unhappy. And I was just like, I don't agree with that. I was like, then what is it? Like, why is that? And I was like, well, Well, I think I'm pretty positive about the company. I'm pretty sure. Right. Like, so much so that people think that I'm a homer, which is probably true, that I'm biased towards the company, that I want the company to succeed, and I overlook a lot of things. I was like, but you guys are probably only seeing the negative because that's what feeds the algorithm the most. And when I'm being negative, I'm way over the top sometimes, and I can be brutal, be really tough. But when I'm being positive, it's not getting much traction because my positive comments aren't as funny. They don't get the interaction. They don't get the engagement. So you're probably not seeing those at all. We had a good discussion about that. Like, once I let them kind of vent and get it off their chest, and then we kind of came to this understanding that's like, no, he actually really does like this company. And I was like, I drove like 4 hours to be here. I got a hotel. I'll leave my kids overnight. Right. Like, I wouldn't do that if I didn't like this company. I wouldn't cover the company so long if I didn't like it. I really do. And I was like, look, there's been some things that I've said in a dickish way that I regret. It's like one of those, some of those times where, like, you say something, you know, you're being an asshole. It's like, you don't really mean that. So I could probably dial some of that stuff back and maybe communicate what I do like a little bit better. But what I can't do is not be me. It's like, I'm going to continue being me. And they're like, yeah, you need to continue being you. That was kind of like the discussion. So at one point they go, but just so you know, there's like 18 people in backstage that don't like you. That was the number that they threw out, like 18 people. Right. And I shit you not, 10 minutes later, like after we have that discussion, and we're like discussing our wrestling philosophies, like what we like. And I was like, explain like where my frame of reference comes from. I talk about my love for 97 WCW, 97 WWF, my love of 84 Mid-South and early stage, like Smoky Mountain wrestling. And like, we were kind of like bonding over those things. And then all of a sudden Carlos Silva shows up. He's like, hey, Mike, before the show gets kicked off, let me show you something. I was like, okay. And he's like, we're going to go backstage. And like, I'm thinking, I was like, oh shit. They just told me 18 people back there don't like me.
You're about to get jumped.
I was thinking, Mike Gilbert from the trailer park is going to have to come out at some point, or Mike Gilbert from the barracks in Afghanistan is going to have to come out, because like, it was kind of ruthless in those days. So as we're walking back there, I'm thinking, it's like, who is the one person in this company that would be willing to confront me for some of the shit that I said? And I started like running through the list. I was like, no, they wouldn't. And I was like, I bet AJ Francis would be a type of guy that would confront me, would kind of get in my face and like, and tell me that I've never had sex with people. Right. Like, he would be like the type of guy. And I walk in there, and then Carlos shows me around. He shows me like the gorilla setup and where Tommy Dreamer. It's so funny. He goes up, there's Tommy Dreamer right there. And like, all of a sudden I got starstruck for a second, because I was like, ECW, like, that's him, right? It's like, and he's just standing there like being a dude. And then I see all the wrestlers, they're all kind of hanging out, they're congregating, and a lot of them are like warming up because they're about to wrestle, like they're getting loose. And then all of a sudden AJ Francis comes over. I was like, oh shit. I was like, god damn it. It was like, I can't beat this guy up. It's like, he's probably gonna kick my ass, and like, so that's just gonna happen. And he comes over, and he was a total sweetheart. He shook my hand. He's like, hey, my name's AJ. How are you? I'm like, oh, Mike. And he goes, nice to meet you. I was like, nice to meet you. And then him and Carlos tell a couple jokes. And then Carlos was like, all right, Mike, well, thanks for coming back here, man. We'll see you afterwards. Like, okay, cool. And then I just went back to my seat and just had a really fun time. And it was a really fun show. And I think everybody's in for a treat if you're a TNA fan. I thought they had some good stuff. I'm not the type of guy to get invited into somebody's house and then bury them while I'm there. So if anybody thinks I'm going to do that, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to bury like ticket sales. I'm not going to bury what they did, because I had a really good time. So, and I think that people are going to, like, TNA fans specifically are going to enjoy themselves. So that was my TNA experience.
Did AJ Francis know you were that, Mike?
And you know, so one thing that I learned while I was there is that my voice and my face are a lot more well known than I thought. And my voice specifically is a bit more powerful than I had ever known, because they all know who I am. So now, did AJ Francis put two and two together? I don't know. Excuse me. I don't know, but he was very cordial and shook my hand, and like, that was, and he was nice. He just, but I think like in real life, he's like super nice guy anyway. Like, he's a good dude. So
here's what's wild to me. You and I started this thing about 4 years ago. Oh, almost five. Going on
five. Years. Yeah, five.
Going about five years now. We're just a couple of idiots. Like,
yeah.
Why would they care I say that you're one of my dearest friends in the world.
Yeah.
Why would they care about your opinion in the slightest? Like, yeah. And again, I love your opinion. You crack me up every week we do this show. Why aren't they just like, well, fuck? They're like, we don't know how to make you happy. All I could think of is, why are they trying to make you happy? Like,
I'm flabbergasted
by this.
I don't think they're trying to make me specifically happy, but I think they would like to be like, people want people to say nice things about them.
Well, I
told him, I was like, look, I don't know why people care. He goes, Mike, you've never even wrestled before. Like, why would anybody care? And I was like, I don't know. but here's what I do is that I'm always honest, like sometimes brutally honest. And I try to give my opinion in an entertaining way. And when I'm being an asshole, people are entertained by it. And so when I'm on Twitter, I'm cranked up to 12, right? And then they go, well, we're not really entertained by it. I was like, well, that makes sense because I'm making fun of you guys. So like, you're the butt of the joke. Of course you're not going to be entertained by it. But I was like, just so you guys know, nothing I say is ever personal. And I was like, but I do understand that like real people work here. I get that.
We got pretty personal with Rachel Evers that one time.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. And you know what? Like, if I met her, like, and I told him, like, look, if I ever was having these conversations, would I still have the same opinion? Yeah. Would the language be as anywhere as near as strong? I was like, of course not. I would never say that to anybody. I was like, I'm talking about fictional characters, but now that I'm here, it's like, these are real people. Right. And so like, that becomes a little bit different now because they were super nice to me. Am I going to like all of a sudden be 100% positive all the time? It's like, no, but they're not asking me to. Like, I don't think that was the goal. But I think like they would prefer if I'm not such an asshole. I get that.
Yeah. And to be quite fair, I think you should continue doing what you do. Because like, we've always been brutally honest on the show. If we like something, we're positive. If we don't like something, you're negative. And I, like I said, I give you shit about being Johnny TNA all the time. Yeah. So the fact that one, they listen, which is really cool in a sense.
Yeah.
Two, they value your opinion enough to be mad about it. Like, honest to God, like if we get comments that are negative to us, I smart ass them for a minute and then I never think about it again.
Yeah.
Like it astounds me that you're like in, and I'm actually jealous. I'm actually a little jealous that you live in people's heads and make them that angry.
Yeah. I don't think I live in their heads. That's probably a little strong, but I could tell when I was there, there were people there that were kind of like upset by my presence. And so I just, but at the beginning, by the end of the night, not at all. Like they TNA took very good care of me. Like went above and beyond to take care of me. So they had the cast of Tulsa King there, and they treated me like I was one of them. And I'm just like a dude. Like I got 2,500 followers, and what I learned is it's not the amount of followers that you have. It's like who the followers are. And for whatever reason, the following that I have and that the following that the show has, Embrace for Impact has, it carries some weight around within that company a little bit. Now they're not going to change their booking plans because of me. But they go, the question was like, what does Mike actually like? And I said, I was like, Mike Santana versus Steve Maclin is like a Gilbert thirst trap. I was like those are my two favorite guys, like in the whole company. Like, and they're in the main event of the next show. It's like, that's you guys booking for me. Like, that works for me. Like, that's what I like. And I said, at the end of the day, I like two badasses, one a heel, one a babyface, fighting for a cause. And they go, well, you would have loved Kevin Sullivan. It's like, you goddamn right I do.
Fuck yeah, Kevin Sullivan. Yeah, absolutely.
I was like, every wrestling booker should learn from 97 WWF and 97 WCW and do that, but in a modernized fashion, because it was chaos, but it was like badasses fighting, right, over a cause. Like, they, and everybody had a storyline, and most of them were pretty good. Now, some of it was hokey. You got to have that in wrestling, but, you know, not all of it has to be hokey, and for the most part, it can be a serious presentation, and that's what I like. I like a serious presentation for the most part. That doesn't mean you can't do ha-ha stuff. I think that has its place. Mm-hmm. I think that shit just has to be limited. And the action has to be increased and the seriousness has to be increased. So that's what I like.
You got it. I agree with you 100%. I think our similar, I think our tastes are pretty aligned. You got to have some humor. I do agree with that. Yeah. Like, I think that we are, I think we are an outlier on the network that we actually do appreciate some comedy and wrestling and are willing to giggle at stuff from time to time. But at the same time, like, my issue with like WWE stuff is nothing feels like it has stakes ever.
Yeah.
You know, like real stakes, like something has to matter. It never feels that way. So that's what I think that we're both men, but you got to have, you have to feel like, we talk about this in writing, like your protagonist has to have a goal that he's working toward, and your antagonist needs to be standing in his way. That's why pro wrestling is so easy to tell a story. Like, we had some good numbers tonight, so I'll go through this because I haven't done this in a while. A story, and this is not J.D. Oliva talking, this is Robert McKee. A story is literally, you have a character, they have a goal, something is standing in the way. The stuff, that is the story. That is a story. I think sometimes we, as wrestling fans, see all the accoutrement, the bells and whistles, and mix that up for like being story. That's not story. That's just beats. Those are story beats. People get obsessed over the beats. And if you have a shit ton of story beats that don't go anywhere, you meander and you don't have anything. And I think that's the criticism of a lot of WWE booking. And if you listen to their own fans right now, they're saying that. I think that was the problem with AEW booking for the better part of 2.5 years, was that it was a lot of stuff that happened, but there's no actual character advancement working toward a goal, right? And I think that pro wrestling, I think, like, you look at, let's talk about WCW 1997, our favorite year.
Yes.
What was the focus? What was the focus of that promotion in 1997? One man had one goal. Sting was going to take out Hollywood Hogan to get, I don't want to use the word revenge because it's too simple, but to get his just due for what they did to him the year before. So everything was driving to that one moment of Starrcade 97, right? Every little thing that happened on the way was a beat in the story. Eric Bischoff will take credit for it, but it's Kevin fucking Sullivan, just like we just talked about earlier. That was the focus of that company for a year, right? Everything that happened in between led to that one moment. It is, in my humble opinion, it is the best well-booked company for one full year.
Yes.
Right, it actually starts a little bit over. It really begins in when the three men, the third manhole angle works really well, and then this really goes to the Sting turn at War Games, the fake Sting turn. Right from that moment on, you have this epic story.
And then to the point, who was booking that?
Mm-hmm. Kevin Sullivan.
Kevin Sullivan. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The data, the nuts and bolts. Eric Bischoff can say, "Oh, I had this idea. It's fantastic. Great." Yeah. You know, you can have ideas. Ideas are great. And I hear it all the time. I get people telling me, "Hey, I got this idea for a story." And they go on like the world and like all this. They have like a nut of an idea. Like, there's a virus that people get sick when they get a computer virus. Okay. Like, what is that? Tell me a story. Like, who are the characters? What are the stakes? And then they're like, oh, that's the hard part, is you can have an idea, a germ of a story idea. Everything comes down to the guy. Who is the guy? Who is the person that we are focusing this on? And you can have multiple stories going at one time, but like, end of the day, it is A to B, and that is great storytelling. And I think we actually had that in TNA with Mike Santana for quite some time. Like, I think that was a really good example of storytelling. And TNA, I believe, no one gives TNA more shit than me, but I think that they did a really good job. They did. They kind of lifted the same structure they had with Josh Alexander from a few years prior, but they did it for a bigger audience. They had more eyeballs on it. So, you know, in pro wrestling, you play the hits, right?
Mm-hmm. You just tweak it a little bit and you kind of recycle it. And they're doing a really good storyline with Steve Macklin right now. He got the fired briefcase, and then he was able to manipulate his way back into getting reinstated. And now they're building. I'm not going to give away what happened on TV. The spoilers are out. I just don't want to do it on the show, but they have some good promos and angles leading into No Surrender, or not No Surrender, I'm sorry, Sacrifice, coming up in March in the main event, and which should be a really good match. Now, guys, I just want to reiterate that conversation I was having was a friendly conversation. Like, nobody was like trying to intimidate me. Like,
hey, motherfucker, you need
nothing like that. Yeah. So I see some of the comments, like, people, like, they were not being mean to me whatsoever. They couldn't have been like more nice, honestly. One person had some things they wanted to get off their chest, and it was important for them to do that. And I let it happen, but at no point was I intimidated. Like, nobody was trying to do that. Like, it's not how it goes, right? We're just two men having a conversation.
My guy here is a combat veteran. Like, I don't think Mike's going to get that intimidated in a professional wrestling locker room.
No.
I think you've seen bigger dogs. We'll just leave it at that.
Well, you know, it's one of those things, like, I tried to fight Aki Bono one time, right? Like I'm willing to go into some dangerous situations. Okay. So I was fine.
If the chat wants, we should do that story again. Once a year, we should hear the mic try to fight.
Just
in case we have new listeners.
Yeah. I voluntarily went into a location where I knew that there was a good chance that I was not coming back. And I did it a couple of times. I've been on convoys. I've woken up to bullets and bombs and dead bodies. Like I've done it all. I love you, TNA. And look, nobody was trying to intimidate me. But that wasn't going to happen anyway. Like I knew when I went there that there was going to be people that didn't like me because of my behavior online. Like I got that. And that also comes with the territory of being like a shit poster and being a podcaster. Like especially I'm being critical of very large, very like in shape, athletic, but creative people. And when you're being critical of creative people that could fuck you up, that could turn badly, right? Like if JD ever met somebody that insulted one of his books, he's probably going to choke him out.
I'm just kidding. No, and that's okay. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Is that like, yeah. I mean, like I'm not going to toot my own horn right now, but I have had bad reviews. I've had people tell me this sucks. And I had to say, Michelle, we're still married. You have to like, not be so mean to me about like, ask you to read. That happened once. You got to like, when you're in a creative world, you have to understand that not everybody is going to like it. And if people are really over the top about it, they're going to get a bigger reaction. And sometimes that's the hard part about putting yourself out there creatively. It's the show too, man. And like, I'll get some shit sometimes and I'll clap back because it's funny and because I enjoy it. But it's like, you can't get personal. And it's hard. Believe me, I get it. When you put yourself out there creatively and you open a vein, because that's kind of what writing and creativity is like, man. Like you're exposing yourself to the faceless masses, and you have to. I used to read all my Amazon reviews. Mm. I look at them like once or twice a year now, because like it was like it would like get to me. I have people like, "What, this guy's an idiot, man." I'm like, "Oh man, I know," but I mean, like it can get to you, but you can't let that. That's why, especially when it comes to like internet shitstorming, especially podcasting, like the most. I love shitting on Triple H. I get texts from people all the time, be like, "Hey man, can you shit on Triple H on the show again?" Like apparently that's a bit that I do. My buddy George did that last week. The fact that he no longer will stand and let and do their fake, they can't even do their fake ass press conferences anymore because it hurts his feelings too much.
Yeah, he's so gotten to,
and they have fake ones. Like he didn't sit next to CM Punk when he was actually having a meltdown like Tony Khan. And Tony Khan's not the toughest person in the world either. But Jesus Christ, like you get so gotten to that you won't even have your fake little podcast or your fake little presser anymore. Jesus, throw a set.
Yeah, but at no point did anybody say that I shouldn't talk or that I shouldn't be myself. They never said that. Yeah, they just kind of think they're just kind of wanting to hear from me. Like, where do you actually stand? Because there's been some times where I was like, when they took the belt off Santana and put it on Kazarian, like, and Santana didn't even get a chance to defend the belt. I was like, burn this fucking company to the ground, right? Now, I didn't mean that, but I was like pissed, right? And
wasn't that the goal? Wasn't that literally the goal of the angle, was to have that reaction from people?
Yeah, and that's what I told him. I was like, I was one of the most pissed out there. I thought all you guys should be cleared out. And then a week later, I find out you're going on AMC. I was like, oh, okay, they're gonna just flip the title right back to Mike. Okay, that makes sense now. And he goes, see, I was like, so shouldn't you just let stuff play out more? And I'm just like, I can only react to what I know. I can't react to what I don't know. No, right. Like don't. I, so
if you, okay. Yeah. I love Game of Thrones, right? The last season, notwithstanding, last season wasn't great. I can admit it. But before that, when they had Jon Snow die on screen, I'm like, I'm done with this show. I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm done. Yeah. I can't fucking take any of these people dying anymore. You beat me up too much. Fuck this. Like, that's good. That's how fan reaction should be. The worst thing you can get is apathy.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's no in between for me. It's either it's fucking awesome or it fucking sucks. That's when I'm talking about wrestling online, right? If I say it was like, it was fine, it means it probably just wasn't all that interesting. Like sometimes it's better if it's like really bad. Like this past Thursday, they had this angle with, do you know who Mama June is? Are you familiar with who Mama June is?
Is that from Honey Boo Boo?
It's Honey Boo Boo's mom. They did an angle with her because WeTV rebooted the show, and they have a whole show with Mama June. Like they're doing, and WeTV is owned by AMC Network. And so AMC asked TNA to do like to incorporate Mama June into one of the episodes to like do a fun angle. So they did do that with ODB, and I buried it. But I also understand AMC is writing the checks. You got to do that stuff. Like, that makes sense. So that, like that's not for me. It's like, I understand why it's happening, but it doesn't mean I'm not going to bury it. Like, that's just not for me. Like, it's not good. That. Yeah, it's not good television. Like, I understand. Do it. Like when you're TNA and like the network asks you to do something, like, yeah, you just got to do it. Like, and try to do it as best you can. But yeah, for sure.
So I've come around, while we're on the subject, I've come around to your line of thinking about Danhausen last week.
Yeah.
That I think it was shitty on purpose.
Yes, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I thought after watching and seeing what they did with, because I said in the show, like, oh, he'll be fine. He'll get over. Just give him a microphone for 5 minutes and people will love him. Sure enough, here we are.
He's t-shirt number one seller. Yep. Like top of the line merch, and every segment he's in is like, as far as like, I don't know what social media engagement means, but he's got all the clicks and the views and the likes, but it's leading towards t-shirt sales. Like they got another boogeyman, another hit on their hands, like a fun little character that they can do sideshow comedy with. Like, he's perfect for them.
Perfect for them. We've been saying that for months. Like, yeah. I first, like, I don't know why you want to do it shitty on purpose. And when I thought about, like, you know what? If there's one character that can survive a shitty debut, it's Danhausen. Yeah. So it worked. You're right. So I think but you got to realize, and I'll give them credit for this right now, is sometimes you steer into the skid. Yeah. And you can do something bad if you understand the reaction is going to be, you know, it worked. It's a gamble. Sometimes that you do something bad and it's just bad and it dies a death. Gobbledygooker, yeah. For example.
Yep.
This one probably worked because there's a little bit more to Danhausen than there was the guy. I still don't know what the fuck they were thinking with the gobbledygooker, quite frankly.
Yeah, like, San Diego chicken. Worked. Like, it just, yeah. Well, what a flop. But anyway, I had a fun time. I'll get to the chat here in a minute. I did want to bring up Ricky Sosa, Ricky Bang Bang, yeah. Sosa from WXW. He wrestled a guy named Brad Attitude. I'm here proclaiming on this show that Ricky Sosa will be the next big star in pro wrestling. I was wondering if he was just an entrance and if he could actually wrestle. Seeing him live and in person, he's a little raw, but he's like, this is not like a cruiserweight. This is not Michael Oku, right? This is not like a little guy. This guy's like 6'4", like over like 215, like 220 pounds. Like, this is like a man, right? And I think he's like 23 or 24 years old.
Really?
He's a big kid and he's athletic as shit. Like, I saw him spring, like just jump, spring from the mat to the top rope in one fell swoop to do like a reverse planche or whatever. Like, he didn't have to like bounce up the ropes like the luchadors do. Like, he just jumped straight up there. Kind of like what Moose does. Moose does that. Like, this is a big kid and tons of charisma. Like I said, a little raw, but he was in there with a guy named Brad Attitude, who's like a veteran who's been around forever. And like, they worked a pretty good match. There was one botch. I hope they just edited it out because they don't need to deal with that. But there were people there in Atlanta that were there to see him. And I'm like, I had barely heard of him a week ago. And there was a lot of people in that crowd. They knew the song. They knew the entrance. And they popped for everything he did. He's a European-style wrestler, obviously. From Europe, but he does a lot of the suplexes and the moves and the all that stuff. Like, the kid is good. I think if TNA locks him in, like, he's probably going to be their next big star, you know, before someone takes him, obviously. But if WWE or AEW gets him, like, right now, like, he is like skyrocketed for sure.
It might actually hurt his development if he were to be signed by either of the big two right now, because WWE, he'll, yeah, just go into NXT and they'll kind of strip away anything unique about him.
Yeah.
And they'll just make him one of their guys. And I'm like, I'm not sold on the WWE developmental system for men. Like, they have not had a guy come out of NXT specifically, one of their products, where I'm just like, dang, that guy's got it. Like, I'm still not sold on Braun Breaker. Like, on the whole, I just not.
I think Trick Williams is charisma wise is there. He's getting there in the ring. He's getting better. When he was in TNA, they had him in there with some veteran talent that could really work good matches with him. So like Santana, for instance, had a good match, mm-hmm, with him, I thought. So, but yeah, he has to be in there with somebody really good.
Like, that's the thing. It was like the history of pro wrestling is littered with guys who were going to be the next big thing, who had a great body but couldn't work, or who had a ton of charisma but couldn't work, or could work but had no charisma. So, like,
yeah,
I think Trick's going to, I don't know. I think Trick's going to be interesting because, like, for all you want to say about Roman Reigns, the dude's good in the ring.
Yeah.
Right. Like all the guys that have gotten there and made it, like the Miz has got a shit ton of charisma, but he never got through because he fucking sucks.
Yeah.
And people want to say how great, oh, the Miz is so great. Like, no, if he was great, he'd be headlining everything.
He's great at being a WWE celebrity. That's right. Like, that's what he's great at.
He's a WWE spokesman. Yeah. He's not, he sucks in the ring. Right. Like, he's terrible. So, I mean, that's just, let's see what Trick can do. Let's see what Trick can do. When, like, because you, if, like, they'll try this a lot, they'll try this a lot over the decades. This is why Ken Kennedy faded away, you know. Yeah. People loved that guy until they didn't. Like, you gotta, at some point, you've got to show that you can carry a match, right?
Well, here's how good the NXT system is. The WrestleMania events are headlined by CM Punk versus Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes versus Randy Orton. Like, those are your two main events. Cody Rhodes just got the belt back from Drew McIntyre on Friday. A friend of mine, who I'll DM you afterwards, is pretty pissed. He's really close to Drew. And it was like, he's not happy. And I'll tell you who it is afterwards. But you know that, it's a whole thing.
Do you know who's really good at developing talent? Hearing that?
Who?
Jim Cornette.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
We're gonna milk that 2002 recruiting class till it's all dead.
Randy's still going strong, man, for sure.
Brother's my age and he's still working. He's still great. I mean, I've never been a huge Randy Orton fan, but I mean, like, he's the best ever at what he does.
He's the best ever at what they want him to do.
Yes,
right? That's what they need him. Like, he's the best ever at his job, right? Mm-hmm. You can't put Randy Orton everywhere. Like, his job is to be a WWE like superstar. Mm-hmm. And he's one of the best that there's ever been at being a WWE superstar. And he was like from cradle to grave too. Like, he was born and bred, and he was born in OVW, and they were grooming him to be what he is right now. And he's been that forever. And he's very freaking good at it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not the biggest Randy Orton guy, but I'm also not a guy that hates Randy Orton. I think he's great at what he does. That's his job. And that's the only thing he ever has to be.
Right. And like I said, it's for a guy like me that likes the work rate stuff. Yeah. I can watch Randy Orton. Like, I don't get disgusted watching Randy Orton. Like, I can say, oh, he's pretty good. Like, and it's just for me. Right.
Yeah.
No problem with Randy Orton. Don't love him. I do think in the year of our Lord 2026 at WrestleMania, what are we at? 42, something like that.
40 something. Yeah. It's a lot. Yeah.
We're going to go with a 46 with a 48 year old, a 46 year old, and 2 40 year olds on top is wild to me. This is the stuff they used to make fun of WCW about. And those guys are all older than all those guys with the exception of Flair. That's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy, man, for sure. All right, let's get to some more chats, and then we're gonna get on to our next topic. Man, we've already been going for 41 minutes, just Mike telling stories of his TNA adventure. Again, want to say, had a lot of fun. I think if anybody's going to go to a TNA show, like, I think pay-per-views would be good to go. But the block of tapings where they do like 2 or 3 weeks in one block of tapings, it's a series of a bunch of matches. And I think that's what people like the most. Like our audience likes to go watch matches, and they had some pretty good matches. Then a couple good promos, but for the most part, it was just like 4 hours of matches. So that was pretty cool. All right, I'm going deep in this. I'm going to skip ahead. I'm going to try to get to as many as I can. Sosa is the guy. They can build around him for 20 years, throw the checkbook at him.
That's not going to happen. That's not real. No. DNA's not holding on to somebody for 20 years. It's not
real. 2 to 3 years, but it can be an important 2 to 3 years in his life and in career for sure. Let's see. A multi-million dollar company has a meeting about Mike. They did not have a meeting about me. That's not what happened. They were having a meeting, and during the meeting, they were bringing up several media people, and I was one of the people that they had talked about. So nobody's like, I'm not that important, I assure you.
It's both sad and funny.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's see. Wrestlers and wrestling companies are such babies. I think creative people in general have an issue with criticism. But again, like, I think I'm in a good place with them. They're in a good place with me. Like, everybody was so cool. Like, they could have treated, like, they didn't even have to invite me. Right. If they really didn't like me, I would not have been there for sure. So let's see. I got the VIP treatment. Yeah, for sure. TNA needs to be nice to Mike. He's one of the people covering TNA, and they need as many positive reviews as possible. Negative BQ too. Yeah. I mean, BQ is the OG. He's been doing like a TNA podcast way longer than us for sure. All right. If Jordan Grace was still there, you'd have been effed. I'm going to look it up. I think I might have been sitting next to her parents. I'm not sure, But she's from like, no, it is definitely not her parents. Never mind. It couldn't have been because her parents are from Texas, not from Atlanta. Jordan lives in Atlanta. Jonathan Gresham and her were at the taping the night before, but Jordan Grace was in WWE. So it wouldn't have been her. Never mind. I take back what I said. But there was like this older couple sitting next to me, and they ended up going backstage after a while. They just seemed like somebody's parents, that just like somebody from local Atlanta. So, all right. They really value you. You're their Meltzer. I don't know. I don't think they're a fan of Meltzer at all. Joel Pearl nitpicks more than Mike. Yeah, but I think probably a bigger asshole than Joel. Joel is better at communicating that with, while still maintaining like people liking him.
Joel's a nice guy.
Yeah, Joel's a really nice guy. Let's see. Tulsa King. Yeah, not Sylvester Stallone. He was not there, but there was some folks there from Tulsa King. One of the guys from Tulsa King's he's a pro wrestler. So he was in the front row. I think he's an OVW guy. So can't wait for Mike Gilbert and Billy Corgan 1-on-1 for the NWA for sure. Like, I would love to meet that. Billy.
Would pay to see that interaction.
Between Carlos, Court Bauer, Tony Khan, Triple H, and Billy Corgan, the one guy that I would be starstruck meeting is Billy.
Because Billy's 100%. An actual star?
Yes. Like, he is the only one of that crew that I would absolutely be starstruck meeting. And I would have trouble with that because I would be such a dork. And I would, like, I'd have a couple wrestling questions, but I would ask, tell me about Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness. Can we talk about Gish? Let's talk about Siamese Dream. Let's just do that.
Dude, and then you know how you guys could vibe. He's a conspiracy theory nutcase.
Oh, yeah.
Too. You guys can get in deep talking about Bigfoot and shit like that.
Oh my God. I want to talk about the Anunnaki. Let's get into it, brother. Hell yeah. Like, we all know that the pyramids were put there by aliens and the Egyptians just found them. Like, everybody knows that. Like, that's for sure.
I would love to sit there and listen to that conversation. I wouldn't say a fucking word. I would just listen.
yeah. Okay, guys, there's a lot of freaking chats here. I'm trying to get to everybody, man. Jeez. Honey Boo Boo Child, I never watched it. That's just not me. I did not know who that was. People had to explain it to me. At one point I thought Mama June was Honey Boo Boo, but she just grew up.
Is she is she still like really, really heavy?
The mom, I think so. Yeah. She wasn't like 600 pounds or anything, but she wasn't like
I thought she was like 600 pounds or something like that.
No, she must have lost some weight because she wasn't that big.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I don't know. I don't watch that stuff.
Okay. Let's see. Damian Redman said I think he's talking about
Ricky Sosa.
Ricky said just turned 21. Yeah. And that he's better in the ring than Trick Williams. Okay. Okay. Pretty sure Javon Evans is better than Ricky. Javon Evans is better than a lot of people.
Javon Evans is
really good. He's one of the best.
Yeah, Javon Evans has been in the WWE training system for a number of years now. He should be pretty damn good at this point.
Yeah. So if TNA signed Sosa, WWE take him right away like Hendry.
Probably.
It took him a year to get Hendry. So they started using him within a year, and then by year two he was full-time WWE. So JD, how many people have WWE signed off of TNA's roster in the last 2 years?
Not many, like two, three, maybe
two. Two. Just how many people has AEW signed from New Japan's roster?
All.
I called them the other night, New Jacuck Pro Wrestling.
Here's the problem with New Japan Pro Wrestling. I was like, fucking sucks, and they don't pay anybody. I can't shed tears for that company. I know there's some people here. I'm supposed to, like, as a Japanese person, like, oh, fuck AEW, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. I mean, if Gato booked an interesting show that got them more money and got them paid more, we wouldn't be in this situation.
Well, since we're on the topic, AEW signs everybody. They just brought in David Finlay and Gabe Kidd and Clark Connors. They're the dogs. Weren't they the war dogs New Japan?
Yeah, they can't use the intellectual property.
Really? Because I thought.
Well, no. I think this is what Joe and Rich were talking about.
Okay, because I haven't listened to Flagship in a little bit.
The theory is that should there be a falling out, then you're relying on intellectual property. It's not yours. So that's why that's why they rebranded Bullet Club Gold and stuff like that. Which, I mean, that's you should do that.
Yeah.
Like you have a partnership until you don't, and like you never know. So it's smarter to do that. And
I was.
Good.
Yeah. Oh, I was just worried that it was like because we're at war, they just didn't want to do that. But no. Okay,
no, that's
what you said makes more sense, actually.
Oh Christ, we are at war. We're gonna have an Iron Sheik character somewhere, aren't we? That just
Well, Juggalo Championship Wrestling, Vince Russo for sure. Yeah, but yeah. Somebody tweeted out. It might have been like, you know, like one of those like Drain Gold or Airmaker or whatever, like one of those accounts. Tweeted out like how many people AEW signed, and it was like over 24 since the beginning of the year. Like, what do you make of them expanding their roster to this with only really 2 TV shows that they have? Like, isn't it hard to keep up with all that?
It's impossible to keep up with all that. I don't know. I get why you pick up David Finlay. Like, David Finlay had nowhere to go. And again, I think there's more value to the former War Dogs if you bring in the 3 of them. Like, I think Gabe Kidd's a star in the making. Gabe Kidd got signed by AEW and immediately started trolling New Japan fans. Like, Gabe Kidd is a fucking diamond in the rough. And I think Clark Connors is pretty damn good.
Yeah. Gabe Kidd gets it. Like, he understands what being a pro wrestler is. Like, he just understands it and leans into it. And he should be cherished and valued. And of that group, he's the star, in my opinion. That doesn't mean I don't think the other guys are good. They're obviously very well-trained pro wrestlers. But Gabe is the guy that you build around.
Gabe is. But I understand why you bring in David Finlay, because you can bring in that act, and the act is functional right now. Yeah. And you can do a free bird thing with him because he got 6-man titles. But this is all it is. I think Gabe Kidd has got a chance to be a real breakout star in that company. I really, really do. He has got it. I was disappointed New Japan couldn't keep him because he's been their best gaijin there in the last couple of years. And it's just they have so many problems in that company right now. And you can blame Tony Khan all you want, but like, I don't know. You got Aaron Wolf. He's a legitimate star, and then you're making him lose a bunch of matches like a typical. Like, I don't get it. Like
he lost a Bad Luck Fale of all.
I know
people.
That's bad. Yeah. That's like I mean I just don't. I don't know, man. I don't. I think Gato's past his prime, and I've been saying it for a year. I do now. Why Tony's signing everybody? I don't know. Iconics, they pick them up, and I get it. They lost less than a minute to the Battling Birds. Well, yeah, they suck. They should.
Did you hear what Dave said about that?
I actually
clipped it. I should have had it ready. I clipped it and I put it on Twitter because I thought it was interesting. Because I kind of thought this too, but I just didn't have the clout to back it up. But Dave said on his show that he thinks that Tony signed them just to take TNA's tag champions. Like, he signed them while they were the tag champions, and then he just kind of wanted to mess with TNA. It's like, which fair. Like, you're in a wrestling war. Okay.
It is a wrestling war. It is a wrestling war.
Yeah.
Now you got to pay them. Like, they're an act, much like Danhausen, who doesn't have to win to kind of have some value to them, because people do laugh at their bullshit. I mean, it's not for me, but there's only so many. I don't get it. I don't get why we keep signing, why they keep signing all these people. Like, there's only so many hours of TV, and I don't get it.
They signed Ashante the Adonis. He came to TNA for a taping, and I wasn't like impressed with him, but they signed him in September and they debuted him last week at Ring of Honor. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think that's a Ring of Honor. I think they've got guys in Ring of Honor. They think maybe we'll give this. I don't think a lot of those Ring of Honor deals are very high paying. So the people that are doing Ring of Honor stuff, I think those are probably closer to some TNA deals. Like, I don't think, like, I don't think Blake Christian's getting paid a lot. I don't mean to dog on Blake Christian, but I don't think there's much there.
He did just get elevated to the main roster. And I'm not saying that's a shit on Ring of Honor, but he did just get graphic. Yes. He did get the graphic yesterday by Tony. That he's He's been there for 2 years, but he got the graphic finally.
So I think that's a Ring of Honor kind of does. It is like their NXT. I do like that they're splitting off we've been saying for years. I like they're doing TNA stuff for Ring of Honor in Jacksonville. I do like the setup, actually. It's got a Memphis-y vibe to it. Mm-hmm. I say it specifically for that red white gradient in the background, which is a lot.
Yeah.
If you watch some of those old Memphis shows from like 85, 86, you'll see that. So that kind of made me think of that. I don't know. Like I said, a shout to the announcer. I'm pretty sure you did that as a favor to Swerve, right? Kicking the tires on him in Ring of Honor, like, because that happens a lot. So
Wrestling is pretty incestual, and I got no problem taking care of your bros. Like, I think, like, if I already have like some people in the military that want to come to my company, I'm like, I got you. Like, if you need it, you know what I mean? So I get
that's how the business world works too. Is you take care of your friends. I have no problem with that. And if you're in a position to help your buddies get some work, great. No problem. There's other signings. I don't get. Like the people who have dual contracts with CMLL, they're doing mainly CMLL work. Yeah. Like you're doing that to keep them out of AAA, which is you're working with your partner. That's different. Like
so
that's
So what is your knowledge base of CMLL? I'm pretty ignorant, I would say, to CMLL and how they operate. Like are they because
that's what I
guess. So they sold 1 million tickets last year. Those tickets can't be that expensive. Like are they making a ton of dough? Are they generating a ton of revenue? Because it seems like maybe the wrestlers they're taking on these dual contracts and they come to the States a lot because the money's better. Like are they making a ton of dough over there?
They're not in contract really. Like I think they're pretty much CMLL is pretty much you work on the houses to this day. Like I think it's old school.
They don't have TV, do they? And like do they have national TV there? They do? Okay.
They do have, absolutely they have TV in CMLL. That's how to get your stories across. Yeah,
I think they're on YouTube for some reason. I don't know. Like I said, that's how I watched it was on YouTube.
That's how we get to watch it. But in Mexico, they absolutely have to. Like CMLL is still the bigger company in the company in Mexico.
Oh yeah, I mean like they're selling what 10,000-15,000 a week for sure.
Yeah, they're doing great. But again, like compare the peso to the dollar. Like it's just it's a great place if you live there and you're comfortable, you're fine. But you can make more money by taking your stardom and come here. But it's been like that forever. Like Mil Mascaras came over here because he can make a lot of money in a short period of time, and it helps AEW and helps CML to bring in Mystico. Like they're bringing in Mystico again for the tournament or for the pay per view next week, and that's great. And it's great to have like attractions still. And Mystico, I think, is a guy too. The less you see him, the better he is.
Yeah, Damian says I heard Volador is leaving CMLL for AAA. I don't know. Like I don't know if that's true or not. So don't like nobody aggregate this. Like Mike Gilbert reads comments and said this. CMLL owns basically all their buildings. Yeah, for sure. Like that helps. Yeah,
massively. Because you own your cameras, you own your lighting, you own the setup. You don't have to pay rental fees. That's massive to have that. So literally every dollar you make, every dollar, and they own everything. So like even the concession, they get all of it. So every peso, I guess, that comes in there is theirs.
I was just curious as to like how much revenue like that a company like that would drive.
I don't know.
Every year. Like I don't know. Like nobody's really done as far as I know.
It's a great
Dave or Lucha.
Cubs might know that. Yeah.
Yeah. Lucha blog. Yeah. Hold on. Lucha blog shut down the Volador thing. Okay. Well mystery solved. Thank you.
Cubs is the man.
Yeah, Cubs is the guy to go to for all things Lucha. I think I should ask him because he seems like to know what he's talking about there. Did you see the Sean Ross Sapp controversy last week with Dragon Lee? So here's what happened. Gunther and Dragon Lee were wrestling on Monday, and Gunther ripped off Dragon Lee's mask, and then like Dragon Lee immediately covered his face up and got away, but the camera shot it. And Sean Ross Sapp took a screenshot of it and said, oh, look, they ripped his mask off, and he posted it. And like all of like the Lucha people went after him and like they're calling him a racist. And Dave was like, hold on. Like he's just tweeting this happened on national television. Like they did it. He's just a reporter reporting it. And so that's kind of the way I took it. I didn't think of it like the sanctity of the guy's face. I didn't think that anybody meant anything by it, but everybody's mad at that guy.
Well, I mean, I see a couple things. One, I'm not going to get mad at Gunther because that is a spot in Lucha in Lucha matches forever. Is you rip off the babyface's face, he covers up, and you pin him. WWE should have cut away. And I'm let's take the cultural insensitivity thing out of it. They should have cut away because if you lose a Lucha, because then losing a luchador's mask is money. There's money to be made there. If you just take off Dragon Lee's mask and show his face, you don't have anything. Like even to this day, when they show clips of Rey Mysterio from like 99 and 2000 after he lost the mask, they blur his face. Like so the fact that Lee Fitting held on that is a bit insensitive, and I think it's a bit short-sighted and stupid. Do I think Sean Ross Sapp is intentionally racist for that? And believe me, I'm no Sean defender. I don't think so. I think he's just showing it was part of the show. Maybe a case of ignorance and indifference all around, but I don't know about racist. I guess I need to talk to you. What was I know Rob Viper was pissed about it.
I'll be honest, I couldn't keep up with everything, but it was like the gist of it is like, that's a that Sean should have known better, even though if he doesn't understand Lucha culture, like people are trying to educate him and he's not willing to listen and he wasn't willing to take it down. I think that's where everybody was mad, and Sean being Sean kind of doubled down on it. It was, you know, answering every attack against him and was fighting with everybody. Or like my advice to Sean would be like, let that stuff go. Like, yes. You don't need those. Like, you're one of the best that we have, like, at this job. And you don't need to deal with these nameless, faceless twits. It's beneath you. And then for me, if like Rob, like if I did something stupid and like people were mad and like Rob Viper or somebody or like Lucha Blog was like, hey, Mike, you know, yeah, this pisses off a lot of Lucha fans. You might not want to go there. I would take it down because I'm like, what's the point? Yeah,
me too.
But that's me. I think Sean just made everybody more mad because he doubled, tripled, and quadrupled down. Now, I didn't see the big deal in it at all. But I understand that I'm pretty ignorant to the entire cult. Like I've watched enough to know that showing the guy's face is not like a good thing. But it was on national television, so I was like, oh, okay, like,
it's pretty stupid. I'm kind of surprised at Sean, because I remember one time I was arguing with Sean and I won and he like publicly apologized. And I was like, I've had that a couple times. I'm like, wow. Like,
And I like Sean, by the way. Me and him have a good relationship. So I'm not trying to like crap on him. I'm just like commenting on the situation because it did blow up and we talk about all the news and that did make like internet wrestling headlines for sure.
You don't want to be that guy. Like, you don't want to be. You don't want to be like the thought of him like term like JD of NY. So I'm like, you don't want people to think that about you. So I feel bad for Sean because I know for a fact that wasn't where his head was at.
No.
He should probably just say, my bad, I'm sorry. Like, I don't.
Yeah. That's how I would have handled it. Because I know he's not a racist. Like, I know he doesn't like, you know, like that's not him. Sean's a nice guy.
But there's times, as you know, white guys that will step into stuff that we don't know better than.
Yes.
And then we got to be like, I'm sorry. Remember when I used the R word on a show about a month ago when I apologized up and down for being stupid? Like, it's okay to say, it's okay to make mistakes and to say, hey, I shouldn't have done that. That was stupid of me. Like,
yeah. Oh, let's see. Let's see. AWN, he's coming after Sean a little bit. He said they had it on his face for a quick half a second. Dragon Lee will be fine, SRS was being an effing child about it.
I didn't see it, so I can't comment.
Yeah, he's being a gringo. Well, he kind of is a gringo. Like, that is our plight in life.
We are gringos. Yeah. I teach at a very minority heavy school district, and sometimes you just got taken on the chin. I got called one way, since you're just a white guy, and I was like, I am.
Yeah. That is correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. All right, let's you know what, JD. No, I advertise it, so we're going to give it to the people. All right.
Give it to the people.
The NFL players versus wrestlers debate. Are you aware of what's going on with that whole debate?
Isn't there something about NFL players aren't as athletic as pro wrestlers or some stuff?
It's the other way around. So this started a few weeks ago where Tom Brady and Logan Paul, because they're like advertising their big Saudi Arabia Football League coming up, which happening in Saudi Arabia.
Oh yeah, that could be a thing.
They have more important stuff going on over there, so they're doing flag football. Tom was like, you know, he's like, I'm a real athlete. I was in the NFL. Like, you're just a wrestler. Like, wrestlers aren't real athletes. Like, he's like, you're very good at what you do, but like, we're elite. Like, we're a different level. And Logan Paul was like they were kind of like going at it, and this became a thing online. So then Logan Paul says, I'll give $1 million to any NFL player that wants to fight me. Now, Logan Paul has done some boxing. He's a good athlete.
Good wrestler. But
not a great boxer, but he's willing to fight for sure. Like, the Paul kids are tough. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So he just said to put up $1 million. Well, then Le'Veon Bell from the Pittsburgh Steelers, he's retired now. He says, I'll take that. Le'Veon Bell's got knocked out by Jake Paul, like pretty viciously. But he said, I'll take that. And Logan was like, well, you actually know how to fight, so I can't fight you, because then I would have to train. I got to take off time. And so like these other NFL players like started answering the challenge and then live on the air, I guess Chris LaGentle called Logan Paul during his podcast and was like, hey, we're not going to let you fight. Like, there's liability. You might get knocked out. We can't let you do it. So now the whole challenge is off. Well, AJ Francis and Moose have chimed in. He said NFL players are much better athletes than pro wrestlers. And I don't even think that's a debate. Like as a whole, like NFL players, because I think the threshold, the barrier of entry for NFL players is so much higher than it is as far as athletic ability. It's so much higher than pro wrestler. It's not even funny. But here's where AJ Francis was like, he says, basically he said that he could, like, NFL players can beat up any pro wrestlers. And I was like, hold on, wait a minute. And then, like, people started naming off wrestlers like Brock Lesnar and some other guys. They go, oh yeah, those guys can all kick my ass. But I'm talking about guys who've never fought before. So AJ's like, I can beat up people who can't fight. It's kind of where we're at now. But
this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life.
It's a dumb argument, which is why I wanted you to chime in on it.
There's so many, like, first of all, athleticism and fighting ability aren't necessarily the same
thing. Two different things. Yeah.
Back in the day, Tank Abbott could whoop a motherfucker's ass.
Yeah.
Was not the greatest athlete in the world.
No.
Now, let's get this straight. To be in the NFL, to play in the NFL, you have to be one of the finest athletes in the world. And on top of that, an amazing athlete with size.
Yeah. And not only that, like, you have to be, like, pretty smart, because, like, there's so many different plays you have to learn, and you have to learn what the other team's doing. You need to know leverage. You need to know, like, to be in the right position. It is a difficult game to play. That's why I never got past high school.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's on another level. So, yeah. Now, that being said, the average NFL athlete is significantly better athlete than the average NFL, or than the average
for sure.
100%. Now, is Will Ospreay as good an athlete as most NFL football players? I think so. Will Ospreay's a hell of a fucking athlete.
Yeah. Ricochet.
Ricochet, hell of a fucking athlete. Hogan Paul, hell of a fucking athlete.
And AJ Francis said that. I think AJ Francis works a lot of indies, and he sees guys who are like definitely not good athletes.
Sure.
Like, you know, yeah.
For sure. Absolutely. And a lot of times back in the day, a lot of times guys made it to pro wrestling because they couldn't make it in the NFL. That's just true.
Yes.
And I know now the tough guy thing is a completely different argument altogether. Like,
yes.
There are professional wrestlers that can probably throw down. Like, you want to point and laugh at El Grande Americano while you want, sure, but Chaz Betts going to fuck you up.
Yeah, like, Chaz
drop you on your freaking skull. That dude is legit.
Chaz would fuck up Le'Veon Bell 100%.
100%.
You know, Godzilla, my man, happy birthday, by the way. It was his birthday 2 days ago. Happy birthday, Godzilla, friend of the show. He brought up Bad News Brown. I was like, Bad News Brown
fuck you up.
Can beat up every football player that ever lived. 100%.
That was one of Canada's. He was one of Canada's greatest judokas. That man was an amazing. Judo is a hard physical sport. Yeah. And that was a tough sumbitch. I think people say, oh, back in the day, pro wrestlers were so much tougher. Like, one,
no,
they cheated. They cheated a lot. Yeah. Two, like they would, like, poke you in the eyes. They would know how to stretch people, and they would fight dirty because you had to win. The street fight, you got to win.
Yeah.
Like, and it's a lot of legend. Like, a lot of legend stuff.
There were, like, tough guys. Don't get me wrong. Like, Brad Rangan's a tough guy, right? Like, Brad Rangan can fuck you up. Mm-hmm. Who was the guy that was, like, the shooter in Florida that would actually, like, wear people out in the gym before, like, letting the guys who can't fight, like, handle them?
Hiro Matsuda was that dude.
It was Hiro Matsuda. There was another guy.
Mike Graham was one of those guys too.
There was another guy who was, like, a legit, like, wrestler though, like a college wrestler. God, I can't remember his name.
Was it Bob Roop?
Bob Roop, yes. He's a tough guy, right?
Olympian.
Guys like Bob Roop
was an Olympian. Yes.
Yeah. Nick Bockwinkel's not gonna beat you up. Ric Flair's not gonna beat you up. Hulk Hogan's certainly not gonna beat you up. No. But, like, the toughest guys that ever existed in pro wrestling could beat up every NFL player that ever lived. Like, Iron Sheik would fuck you up. You know what I mean? Brock Lesnar today at almost 50 years old can beat up every football player that's currently playing. The only football player they probably couldn't beat up would be Steve O'Neill, who defeated him in college, you know, but, like, for the most part, like, he's beating up everybody. Like, and I don't even think it's close.
In a fight at the moment, I think Brock, I just having seen Steve O'Neill last summer in Fargo, Brock's winning that fight today. He's lost a lot of weight. But Steve O'Neill's a much better wrestler than Brock was. Like, that's the thing, though. It's like fighting. Are we talking, and when we say fighting, that means so much something different. Like, if you fight, are we talking, like, a street fight? Are we talking boxing? Are we talking MMA?
Boxing is different. Like, street fight, here, look. Le'Veon Bell versus Prime Harley Racer Haku. Haku would eat your eyeballs.
Haku is an actual like warrior. Harley Race is a tough dude. Haku is a sumo.
Yeah, but like, Harley Race is like smoking a cig. I think Le'Veon Bell probably takes out Harley. Mm-hmm. And I love Harley. He's one of my favorites. But Haku's a little. He's like Haku is mean. You know what I mean? Like nicest guy in the world, but like Le'Veon Bell doesn't have a mean streak in him. Like he's not going to take a pull cue and hit you over the head. Haku would, and he would gouge your eyeballs out.
I truly believe if Haku had grown up today, he would be one of the most elite UFC heavyweights of all time. Because he was a really good athlete.
Yeah,
he was rugby, right? Shit, rugby, and he did sumo.
And sumo, yeah, for sure.
So I mean, he was a martial artist. He was super tough. He just came up in the wrong era to like really take advantage of that. Haku would have fucked people up. Like, and again, it is all legends. Scott Steiner would fuck people up.
Yeah, you know? Scott and Rick both. Like everybody that ever played in the NFL, Scott and Rick would take him out. Could the Road Warriors? No.
No, that was all gimmick. They were bodybuilders.
They were coked up bodybuilders. They're not beating anybody up. But, you know, and so I think when, like,
I don't know, Hawk had a reputation in the locker room as a guy who could fight. So, I mean, yeah, like,
but Too Cold Scorpio didn't believe him. Yeah,
that's true. You go Scorpio, whoop that ass. I did forget about that. That's true. It's just different. We talk about fighting. Like, what does that mean? And fights themselves are so weird and random. Like, you're just talking like a regular street fight. That's just about survival and who's willing to get really fucking dirty. You know? I don't know.
Well, I think Le'Veon Bell is trying to get himself into pro wrestling, which kudos. Like, this, I think this is a way to do it if you want, because he retired from the NFL. He tried boxing and he got worked over by Paul. But look, he said he's trying to say I would throttle Seth Rollins, but he tagged Seth Rogen. I just wanted to show everybody that.
Yes, like he's right. He would fuck Seth Rogen up. He's right about that.
Yeah, but that's the level that we're talking about here. Of
to be fair, he would fuck up Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins is like a tough guy. Yeah.
No, like, Seth Rollins is not a tough guy. No, yeah. And he's tagging everybody that he could whoop. And like, so then the argument became like, well, if you take away all the wrestlers that can fight, like NFL players are beating up everybody else. Well, like, okay. Like I guess you could have that. Sure, yeah. I'll go okay. That. If you take away all the guy, like you take away Kurt Angle and Shelton Benjamin and Bobby Lashley. Like, and that's the one thing that's the thing that AJ Francis said. He goes like, I fully acknowledge that Matt Riddle and all the, Kurt Angle and Lesnar, they could all beat my ass. But I think he's like thinking of like, you know, like Ricochet's not beating me up. I was like, of course not. Like I've met AJ. I've met AJ Francis. He can beat up most people. Like he's a large man. Dude. And he's a great athlete, by the way. Really good athlete. Defensive tackle.
Yeah.
Had legit reps in the NFL. Like underrated athlete. Like, yeah.
But again, like, that doesn't mean you can fight. It doesn't mean I've seen a lot of fights.
Hey, I just want to acknowledge this is the dumbest thing we ever talked about on the show. Total meathead conversation. But
This is the whole
who's tougher, Muhammad Ali or Bruno Sammartino, right? Like
Muhammad Ali.
yeah, of course.
And Bruno was a tough dude. Don't get me wrong, but
he was. But he wasn't Muhammad like Ali a legit.
Bruno wasn't a shooter. No, he was not a shooter. And Muhammad Ali was the greatest boxer that ever lived.
So here's a good example right here. The Vader Orndorff fight is hilarious and completely removes Vader's toughness. First of all, Vader's still tough, but Paul Orndorff is a motherfucker. this is different levels.
This is what I'm talking about. Yeah. Like just because Paul Orndorff beat Vader's ass doesn't mean Vader isn't tough. It means Paul Orndorff was insanely tough. And that's like he had a Paul Orndorff. Like
can you just tell the story real quick of what happened with Paul Orndorff and Vader? Like the story
as I recall.
Yeah.
Vader was being a dick about something in the locker room, and Orndorff told him to knock it off, and he said no, and was flipping off to Orndorff, and Orndorff literally in the locker room with flip-flops on beat the shit out of Vader. Like that's the thing about a big guy is a big guy, if you can get a couple shots in on their face, most of them drop because they're not used to being punched in the face. Now that being said, I've seen Vader fuck some dudes up. Vader legitimately broke Joe Thurman's back.
Yeah, like, he did.
Vader was a tough dude, but Paul Orndorff was just tough and ornery and mean. Yeah.
He was a Florida redneck that was also a star football player that could fuck you up.
Paul Orndorff was so tough that he had this herniated disc in his neck where he lost all the muscle in his left arm, and he built it up so much that although it was the smaller arm of the two, significantly smaller, it was the stronger arm. That's just fuck you. Like you trained because fuck you. Like,
yeah,
Paul Orndorff's on a different level of crazy.
I was watching. I don't know why. Because I'm a maniac, but I just had the TV to myself for like 2 hours last night, and I was watching 1978 Mid-South on YouTube, and like it's young Paul Orndorff, they had this whole issue. So the show starts. Now we're off on a tangent, but
sure.
The show started. It's Boyd Pierce and Leroy McGurk, right? And they're just kind of talking about there is an issue between Paul Orndorff and Ernie Ladd.
I want to put that really quickly. The show announcers were Boyd Pierce and Leroy McGurk.
Leroy McGurk,
blind as a fucking bat. Leroy McGurk was doing commentary on the show.
Well, you're gonna kill my punchline.
I'm sorry, that was a joke.
So you're burying the lead, JD.
Sorry.
But yeah, that's the. Well, they were introducing the show. Bill Watts comes and replaces Leroy McGurk. After that, but they're talking about the Paul Orndorff and Ernie Ladd feud. And how they have instant replay overturned Paul Orndorff's victory, so he's no longer the NWA United States champion. And then Leroy McGurk says, "You fucking ruined it." he goes, "All right, fans, we're going to see a great night of action tonight." And I was like, "Leroy, you're not seeing shit."
Sorry.
And then little did I know they were bringing in Bill Watts to replace him, and so like that, like, and I got to see Cowboy Bob Ellis wrestle, and Outlaw Ron. I'd never seen Bob Ellis wrestle before. I'll send you the video.
Yeah,
but, 1978 Mid-South just randomly on YouTube. That's awesome.
I love YouTube because I like that WWE doesn't care about this copyrights anymore with their older stuff. So now cool things are getting posted. I think they just posted a great Muda compilation from 89-90 that just absolutely rules.
Yeah. The WCW Vault, really good. And then like random stuff like channels on YouTube are just posting old like NWA content and Mid-South and stuff. So I had never seen 78 Mid-South, so it's good stuff.
Me neither. I have to check that out.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, we have gone overtime. We were supposed to do an overtime episode. I was going to maybe we should just do the NFL players on overtime, but I advertised it, so I had to give it to people. Yeah. So we'll do something later this week for overtime for sure. We'll go to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJD Show. I think that's going to do it for us this week. Thanks to everybody in the comments. You kept it lively. I appreciate you. Thanks, everybody. If you want to check us out again, patreon.com/TheMikeAndJD Show. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. Amen, no rain on the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A-game, better bring your A-game. Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. Amen, no rain.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.